Author, environmentalist, and activist Bill McKibben will give the annual Elizabeth and Lawrence Vadnais Environmental Issues Lecture at the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts in North Adams, Massachusetts on Thursday, December 5th at 7 p.m. McKibben's 1989 book, The End of Nature, is regarded as the first book for a general audience about climate change. He's a founder of 350.org, the first planet-wide grassroots climate change movement, which has organized 20,000 rallies around the world in every country except North Korea. The Schumann Distinguished Scholar in Environmental Studies at Middlebury College and a Fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, McKibben was the 2013 winner of the Gandhi Prize and the Thomas Merton Prize. His most recent book, Falter, Has the Human Game Begun to Play Itself Out?, was published by Macmillan in April. Bill McKibben, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Well, as always, a pleasure.
You are giving this lecture at MCLA on Thursday, December 5th. Obviously, you speak to students frequently, as you are at Middlebury College, too. But what do you think is important about going to universities and giving lectures?
Well, right now, an awful lot of the energy in the climate movement, with this sort of cresting, burgeoning movement to try and demand, finally, some action on climate change, so much of it's coming from young people. Some of them are really young people. You know, I've got to spend some time with Greta Thunberg this fall and all the other kids her age, you know, high school, junior high school, who are doing such amazing work organizing these giant climate strikes, and a lot of it at college. Colleges all over the world. We've had this massive divestment campaign, you know, that's now at $11 trillion in endowments and portfolios that are divesting from fossil fuel. A lot of that energy has come from colleges. I don't know whether you saw the pictures from last weekend or not, but students and alumni taking over the field at halftime at the Harvard-Yale game and just sitting down, having to be arrested, demanding that Harvard and Yale sell their stocks in coal and gas and oil. So there's a lot of energy going on right now.
With so much to try to keep track of, with so much that is going badly, things that are going wrong, how do you pick what to focus on any given moment, on any given day?
Well, so climate change is the biggest crisis that human beings have ever wandered into, and we haven't yet really begun to grapple with it. There's two main ways we've got to do it. One is politically, and that's why there's lots of people talking about it in the context of the next election, and it's why there's the, you know, powerful movement for a Green New Deal spearheaded by that New York heroine, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and the Sunrise Movement. The other lever that we can pull is the financial one, and that's why we also work not just on Washington, but on trying to break some of the power of Wall Street. These are the guys that are funding the oil companies. The latest data shows that the four biggest U.S. banks, Chase, Citibank, Wells Fargo, and Bank of America, have dramatically increased their lending to the fossil fuel industry in the years after the Paris Climate Accords. That's about as sociopathic as one can get at. So there'll be a lot of campaigning going on in the next 6 months to try and make people understand that their bank account and their credit card may be doing serious, serious, serious damage to the environment, and that they can really play a role in turning that around.
And where should people look to find more information about what they can do?
Well, 350.org is, if you're connected in there, you'll have a good sense usually of what's going on in the climate movement. It kind of covers the waterfront, and there are good local chapters across much of your listening area and the sort of national 350.org. So that's probably as good a place as any to have a kind of regular point of contact.
The Trump administration has notified the United Nations that it would withdraw the United States from the Paris Climate Agreement. What does that withdrawal, I mean, obviously, one knows surface what it means, but could you dig deeper?
So the first thing it means is Americans need to feel quite ashamed. The country that put more carbon into the atmosphere than any other country is also now the only country on Earth literally not cooperating with the one global effort to do something about it. Just think about that for a minute. What it means in practice is, you know, the Paris Agreement was by no means going to solve climate change. We all left Paris in 2015 aware that it was a start. The hope was that as countries began to deploy renewable energy, they'd find that it was cheaper and easier than they'd imagined. And so the pace of what was agreed to at Paris would speed up. There'd be a kind of virtuous cycle. And I'm afraid that the Trump administration in general and a few other autocrats around the world, Bolsonaro in Brazil, Erdogan in Turkey, you know, Mr. Putin, all of Mr. Trump's friends and cronies, have interrupted whatever momentum was developing. They're putting, if they can't completely close off the road to a clean energy future, and they can't for reasons we can talk about, they can slow down our progress along that road enough to keep us from really managing to meet the challenge of climate change. Eventually, we're going to run this planet on sun and wind, and the reason is, above all, that they're really cheap. The engineers have done their job so well, bringing down the price of a solar panel, like 90% in the last decade, that this is now the cheapest way to generate power, sun and wind, across much of the world. And if we were smart, we'd be grabbing that with both hands. But of course, the Trump administration and others like him are doing just the opposite. They're trying everything they can to slow down the progress of that necessary change. And so we see all this work to build up the coal industry. We see all this work to get in the way of better mileage regulations and the necessary conversion towards electric cars, you know, on and on and on down the list. So it's a great tragedy right at the moment when the world could actually benefit from American leadership. We're getting precisely the opposite out of our, I guess you could call them, leaders.
You said a moment ago there were reasons they can't close the road, and we should discuss those reasons.
Just because this stuff is cheap, it's necessary from a environmental climate point of view. If we don't do it, the world will get wrecked, but it's also cheap. The problem is we're not doing it fast enough. So, I think that almost the kind of nightmare scenario is 50 years from now, we run the planet on sun and wind. But the planet we run on sun and wind is a fundamentally broken one because we made the transition too slowly. We got to do it in 10, 15 years. That's what the scientists now are just shouting at us. There was yet another big letter from 11,000 scientists last week saying humanity has never faced a crisis like this and you have to move fast. It's as if the scientists have just, come out of the lab and they're waving their white lab coats like flags to try and whip the rest of us into some kind of action.
Your most recent book, Falter, poses in its text and in its subtitle, "Has the Human Game Begun to Play Itself Out?" which feels like what we're kind of brushing up against right now. It was published in April. When you write a book with all of these changes happening so fast and so much going wrong so quickly, have things changed since you published your book this year?
No, the trouble really is that nothing has changed. I wrote the first book about climate change, a book called The End of Nature.
Mm-hmm. 1989.
30 years ago this autumn.
Mm-hmm.
And, sadly, the book is still, the only mistakes in it were things, changes come harder and faster than we thought. But otherwise, we're going exactly according to plan. None of this is all that mysterious. You pour carbon into the atmosphere. Its molecular structure traps heat that would otherwise radiate back out to space. The temperature goes up and everything changes. And that's what we've known for three decades now. And it's just we haven't risen to the challenge yet.
You've been, thinking about this and working on this for a long time. For those who are still climate change deniers, man-made climate change deniers, how do you think they justify that stance? Or how have you observed they justify that stance?
Yes, in my experience, it's not that they're lacking, that you could hand them another scientific paper and the scales would fall from their eyes. It's ideological. There are a certain number of people, happily fewer and fewer and not that many, that just can't begin to deal with the reality of this. I think for many of them, the syllogism in their mind goes like this. I believe that markets solve all problems. Markets aren't solving climate change. Therefore, climate change isn't a problem. And that's not a very logical syllogism, but it's an emotionally comforting one if you've spent the last, 30 years tuned into Rush Limbaugh instead of WAMC. It helps preserve your worldview a little bit longer. The good news is the polling shows 70% of Americans are now understanding what's going on. Partly that's because we've done good movement building. Partly it's because, big chunks of California keep catching on fire. Much of the Midwest keeps, drowning in record deluge. And storms like we've never seen before keep plowing into the East Coast. So, at a certain point, who are you going to believe? Fox News or your own lying eyes, so we're getting there. It's just that the powers that be, the fossil fuel industry, the financial industry, have such a death grip on our government that we have to somehow dislodge it so we can move in the short time we still have.
We're just about out of time, but I wanted to ask you one more thing before I let you go. In your opinion, who are the Democratic primary presidential candidates who have maybe the best handle or best stance on environmental issues?
It's a good question. And the good news is that taken as a field, they're mostly doing pretty well. They're well to the left, even the most recalcitrant of them, of where the party was 4 years ago. I can say that with some confidence because I wrote much of the Democratic Party platform on climate change in 2016 and tried to wrangle it through an endless series of negotiations. As expected, Senator Sanders and Senator Warren are the two that are the most outspoken about this. Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington, talked constantly about climate change. And in very powerful and impressive terms. When he left the race, Senator Warren basically said she was adopting his platform. Tom Steyer has also talked very knowledgeably and powerfully about climate change in the campaign, as he's done in the real world for a long time. So I guess that's probably the cream of the crop at the moment.
Bill McKibben will give the annual Elizabeth and Lawrence Vadnais Environmental Issues Lecture at MCLA on Thursday, December 5th at 7 p.m. mcla.edu for more information. Bill McKibben, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for keeping up this good work, even with Joe out of the picture for a little while, and send him all good wishes.
Of course, we will. Thank you.
Take care.
Once again, the lecture at MCLA is at 7 p.m. on December 5th, mcla.edu. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.